What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's 7:14 now, and there are a couple of systems out in the Gulf, not in the Gulf, in the Atlantic, none of which are threatening us, not even systems, waves. And I just saw a meteorologist on TV talking about the Gulf being closed because of ridges and this and that. So nothing to worry about other than hot and humid with a chance for showers like normal in August. And considering we're heading into the teeth of hurricane season, I guess we'll take it. Krista McCurdy joins us now, professor of medicinal chemistry at the University of Florida College of Pharmacy. Talk about kratom. How you doing, Doc?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. You guys watching hurricane season as well as us, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All the time.
Yep. I hate it because in Cleveland it's just summertime, but here we go. So I mentioned earlier before we went on the air that before you came on that I hurt my back about a year and a half ago, and I tried some of this kratom 7, whatever it was, OH, before it was illegal, obviously, a year and a half ago. And I got to tell you, this was stronger than any medication I had when I had two knee replacements. And it amazed me that this would be legal and on a shelf and available to anybody. Thoughts?
Yes, we've been studying it for a number of years, and we knew from about 2016 that it was a very potent opioid, a pure opioid, just like what you would get at a prescription from a pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And so we've been studying the abuse potential of it since then, and we've been sounding an alarm from a scientific perspective that this was out there and available and could be potentially dangerous.
So what does the science show about this stuff? Because I got to tell you, Doc, from my personal experience, again, having had two knee replacements and having had some very strong opioids, this was stronger than anything like that at all.
Yeah, I can't speak from any personal experience on it, but what I can tell you with the animals that we've worked with, it's high abuse potential. And so we've done all of the gold standard testing that is required by the FDA to show abuse potential of a substance. And that's what the DEA would then use to place items into the Controlled Substances Act. And this meets all of the criteria for a controlled substance. And so it is very powerful. It's more powerful than morphine, not as powerful as fentanyl. And we don't know really where the danger is in between those two. We know how dangerous fentanyl can be. But we just don't know how dangerous this is in humans.
Along those lines, you know, a big problem with fentanyl and people buying pills off of the street. Let me just make my case here and you can respond to it. People are going to find a way to alter their consciousness, whether it's paint, whether it's booze, whether it's spray things for the computer, where I've seen shows where these people are inhaling thousands of these things. We also took, I think, nitrogen off of the market or whatever it was that people were inhaling, helium, whatever it was, I forget, with these, I forget what it was. Recently, the legislature took it off the air, off the market. But I guess what I'm wondering is, so people can find a way to alter their consciousness. They buy pills off the street, which sometimes are poorly mixed, and they get all the fentanyl, and somebody else doesn't get any, and the person who gets all the fentanyl dies. So when it comes to this kratom, was there the same problem with this where you get a bad batch of kratom, you die, or was there some measure of quality control over it, or do you know?
It's a great question. We really don't know. There's not much quality control over it. What they do to produce the 7-OH materials is actually take a very concentrated enriched extract from the kratom plant itself, and then they treat it with chemicals. So they do what we call a semi-synthesis or a synthetic procedure to create the 7-hydroxy, but it also converts everything in the extract into an oxidized byproduct. And so these pills are actually being sold with no quality control at all, and there's a whole mixture of things in there. some of which we haven't been able to identify yet and understand really what the ramifications of those things are, because they could be toxic in and of themselves. But so far, we haven't been hearing of people dying like we've heard with fentanyl overdoses from a rapid rate. But it's also not been something that's really being monitored for until earlier this year. 7-hydroxymitragynine is the actual name of the compound, mm-hmm. and it hadn't been monitored for at all by poison control centers or emergency rooms, and it's still not very widely done.
And I'm just wondering, trying to play devil's advocate as I always do, if this wouldn't be better if there was some kind of quality control standard, then people buying pills off the street and getting bad pills and dying from one pill, as some young people have done here in the area and all over the country. And again, I'm not trying to make an argument for kratom. I'm just saying that people are going to do, Doc, whatever they can to sometimes alter their consciousness.
Yeah, no doubt. So let me be clear. This is not kratom. This is a semi-synthetic product.
You know what?
That's an
important distinction, and I want to pick it up there when we come back, all right? Difference between kratom 7.0, or whatever you call it, and by the way, nitrous oxide is what the legislature also made illegal in Louisiana. 720, more about kratom when we come back. You got any thoughts, text them in to 504-260-1870. Somebody texted in and said, listening to your show regularly, I have determined that you are a medical catastrophe. Actually, just the opposite. Problem is, I'm not 30, and I'm still acting and living like I'm 30. Traffic now, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Christopher McCurdy, professor of medical chemistry at the University of Florida College of Pharmacy. He says kratom 7.0, I believe, or 7OH, we'll get to that in a second, is a pure opioid available without a prescription, so it's akin to having morphine or oxycodone for sale at a smoke shop or a gas station. It's a public health crisis waiting to happen. Somebody texted in, doctor, and said, I don't know if anyone has taken kratom that was mind-altering. It just stopped the pain. Well, the 7OH that I took was like nothing else I'd ever taken, and I knew I didn't want to take it again because it was like oxycodone and whatever they gave me after the knee surgery on steroids. It was ridiculous. So tell me about the difference between kratom and are you referring to it as 7HO? Or how do you call it that? What is it?
7OH.
Okay. Sometimes, tell me the difference.
Sometimes it's just called 7. So 7OH is actually a metabolite of one of the main compounds that's found in kratom. And our body produces it. So it's not a foreign substance for people who are taking kratom. However, it's produced in very small amounts. Mm-hmm. And what is being done, as I mentioned before, it's not kratom any longer. It's a byproduct of the kratom plant that has been chemically manufactured and packaged, and it is a pure opioid. Kratom is very different. Kratom is a tree that's been in Southeast Asia for centuries with really no issues, and the leaf material is not problematic. It's not really mind-altering. However, as you make it into these very concentrated products, it becomes a different substance. And then this product, 7OH, is a synthetically produced product that is not any longer a natural product like kratom. It's not derived. It's not from the tree any longer. It's actually chemically made.
So I think
pure opioid in the action.
I think pure opioid. I think the state made all kratom illegal. Did they go too far with that? Did they take something off the market that could have helped people that was not necessarily problematic? And should they have focused on the 7OH? If I'm saying
so,
that right.
I think the problem is, the problem is that it's hard to tell the difference at this point. And I think that's why some legislators are confused, because the public is confused. A lot of individuals are confused. Physicians really don't even know about 7OH and it being different. Many people are calling all of these things kratom, and kratom is not all equal. As I said before, we have the leaf material, which is more similar to the traditional form that's been used in Southeast Asia, and then we have concentrates that are very potent liquids that are very different from the way it was intended to be used traditionally. And then we have these 7OH products that aren't even kratom anymore, yet they all get thrown into the same bag as kratom, if you will. So when someone goes to purchase it and they say they want to try kratom or they want kratom, some of the vendors or smoke shops, gas stations are even selling the 7-OH as kratom products. Some of the products are labeled as kratom. And so in order to be overly cautious, I think legislatures in some states, and Louisiana, one of them, have just decided to ban everything. Is it the right decision? That's not for me to weigh in on, but I think that kratom itself has benefits for people, and that's why it is not being targeted by the FDA or the DEA at this point in time. But 7-OH is a public concern, health concern, and it is being targeted. It may be that 7-OH turns out to be a great thing if it's studied properly and regulated and treated right. But at the moment, it's like having morphine available at the gas station.
It's akin to buying a bottle of oxycodone or whatever at the station, correct?
Correct.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time. Our Dr. Christopher McCurdy, Professor of Medicinal Chemistry at the University of Florida College of Pharmacy. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk about deep fake videos impersonating real doctors being used to push fake medical advice. And also talk to you about something that last Sunday's game had in common with the Saints-Rams no-call game. What? Interested? You'd better be. This thing runs deep. Deep. I'll tell you about it when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Tommy Tucker, WWL, 7:45, quarter till 8, joined now by Tony Anscombe, Chief Security of, it says evangelist, I'm guessing it's analysis, or are you an evangelist?
No, I am an evangelist.
Okay. Tell me how that works with cybersecurity, or is it?
What that means, Tommy, is I wander around the world talking about cybersecurity, the current threat landscape, and some of the problems that people might experience from cyber threats.
So in other words, it's got nothing to do with religion. You are basically evangelizing, proselytizing about phony internet stuff?
Correct. Okay. I'm definitely not a religious evangelist.
Well, when I saw that, it confused me. So I get a chief security evangelist for cybersecurity company, ESET. Tell me about the more alarming deepfake videos that you're seeing, Tony.
Well, these deepfake videos that we've recently reported on are really concerning because they're using AI-generated deepfakes to pose as gynecologists, dietitians, or other health professionals, claiming to have, you know, not miracle cures, but certainly cures to some of the things that ailments that people might have, or promoting drugs such as weight loss, etc., and pointing them to things that aren't real. And of course, they look really convincing as they're created with AI, and it's becoming harder and harder to spot what is a deep fake and what is not.
So they are deep faking with legitimate, well-known doctors pushing their snake oil, or what's going on? How do people know that it's not just a guy in a white coat or a woman in a white coat?
It's a mix. Some of the videos are using avatars created in AI tools, i.e. fictional people that don't exist, but others will use the images of real doctors, what I define as celebrity doctors, doctors that you might know the image of either online or from TV or such like, and they're using those images as well. So it might look like somebody familiar to you as well being used online.
Do people pass this along? And it seems like a lot of people get their information from social media, so it would seem as though all you got to do is get one or a couple of people to buy in, and then it succeeds. How successful are these deep fakes, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask you.
Well, unfortunately, they do become passed along by some people, and some people will be dragged into believing that they are real. And bear in mind, if somebody's got a medical issue, and they're looking for information and they stumble across one of these and are believing what the video says, then you're also catching them at their most vulnerable because they're looking for information and they're looking to solve a medical problem. So they are vulnerable to this type of content. But often this content just leads you to, you know, drugs that actually don't do what they say they're going to do, and try and get you to buy natural supplements, as they would call them, that aren't going to perform.
I'm seeing a CBS News story in which you were quoted. One video touted a product 96% more effective than Ozempic. Do we know if it's just a benign product, or not only is it not do what it says it's going to do, but it can be harmful as well?
I believe in that instance, it just doesn't do what it says it was going to do. So it's a natural remedy that might, I mean, it might benefit weight loss in some way, but not at the rate of Ozempic, which, as I think you and I probably know, is quite effective at weight loss.
I lost 80 pounds on it, so you're preaching to choir on this one, Tony. Do these companies, TikTok...
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most, exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, are they really diligent when it comes to this, or is it all about the dollars?
Well, they will take it down once they see it, once they recognize it, or once it's been reported to them. They are pretty swift at taking down the accounts that are behind these type of videos. But the problem is, as fast as you take them down, somebody can be putting them up at the other end and either modifying the videos or putting the same videos back online again. So it becomes a cat and mouse game of kind of whack-a-mole of trying to stop the bad guys putting these videos online.
Now, let me take a break. We come back. I want to talk about ways that we can spot AI deepfakes, which really concern me, especially when it comes to politics or whatever, because, you know, people can believe a lot of things on the internet that aren't true, and especially if they see somebody that is purported to be President Trump saying something, or some other world leader or something, and get all riled up when in fact it's not even real. 7:50, 10 till 8, we're talking to Tony Anscombe, Chief Security Evangelist for cybersecurity company ESET, about deepfake videos impersonating real doctors used to push fake medical advice. And if you see something, as always, that seems too good to be true, chances are it is. 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker talking to Tony Anscombe, Chief Security Evangelist, zealot, if you will, for cybersecurity company ESET. We're talking about deep fake videos. You know, somebody texted me about an old picture that's floating around out there, and I had a new one created with an AI app. So AI is not bad because it put me in a suit I've never worn. But tell me how we can spot videos that are deep fakes, and I guess there is a difference between deep fakes and something innocent like a headshot.
Well, whether it's a deep fake photograph or a deep fake video, it's still deep fake. Okay. I mean, it's still been something that's been manipulated. But the problem is that as the AI tools get
full disclosure, I may have touched that picture up a little, Tony. Thank you for bringing it up.
As long as you got rid of the gray hair and the lines.
Well, the lines are gone. There's no hair, but that's okay. Go ahead.
They're becoming challenging to detect visually because the AI tools are getting better, and more importantly, they're becoming cheaper to use. So, i.e., the barrier to entry for somebody to create deepfake is much lower. But there are still telltale signs. You know, the incorrect background shadows in the wrong way, the eye movement, fluctuations or differences between awkward mouth movement and the actual audio. But, you know, I think I'd come up with a slightly different rule. If you're seeing something, and I think you said it before you went to the commercial break, was, you know, if something seems too good to be true, then it probably is. I would take the view that believe nothing and verify everything.
Mm-hmm. How concerned are you, Tony, when it comes to not just consumers, but politically with deep fakes?
Well, again, I mean, a lot of people have been reliant on social media for news, and that's how they digest what's going on in the world.
And I might add, looking to believe what they want to believe already, so they might be more willing to accept a deep fake than they would to vet it, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure anything you or I can do will change human behavior on that one. But I think if you want to actually verify, you know, if you want valid information, then you need to go look for the information at the source of where the information will come from, and not trust somewhere else on the internet where it may have come from, be it social media or any other means in that way.
Anything else, Tony, on your radar about deep fakes?
Yeah, they're going to get more and more believable. It will become more challenging to detect them. And one thing I'd say is, if you've got kids, make sure your kids are aware that some of the content they're seeing online probably isn't real. The people aren't real, and they should be very skeptical of what they're looking at.
You know, as simple as it seems, Tony, what you're saying is, hey, back in the 50s, what was depicted in the movies, that wasn't real either. But it's amazing how people will suspend their disbelief now. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Tony Anscombe, Chief Security Evangelist for cybersecurity company ESET. When we come back, we're going to talk to Clancy Dubose, political editor, columnist for Gambit, and WWL political analyst about Mayor LaToya Cantrell's indictment. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.